Is someone there?
Hi, this is Ira.
Ah, yes, then it's all okay.
Hi, Tim. Tim here.
Hi, Tim.
Hi, Tim. Bill, are there slides for this next presentation?
Yes, I will upload them.
Okay, thank you.
Green card
arrived. Are you laughing?
So we're waiting for the slides.
Yes, yes.
We are seeing Phil on the virtual room uploading the slides. It's really, really quite recursive.
Hello.
Yes, I found the
extension.
Yeah. Yeah.
You guys.
Can't see the slides.
They will be there soon, Hentak. There's a caching problem.
Okay. Just being impatient.
Delays pushing it out of its cache.
Now we can start. Now every screencast participant should see this.
I think cut off on the right.
Yes, yes. Let's try to see this.
We don't cover hands. We don't need that part.
Oh, that sounds like Glenn over there.
Yeah. Hi, Hentak.
Hi, Glenn.
I've got any problems.
That's better.
Yes.
The color's all wrong now.
There's no color managed. Probably X has no color managed. But this you have to fix. This is your bug.
Is that an instant projector?
No, it's in focus.
ICC profile for projector.
Okay, so I'm Michael Burrell from Artifacts, and I'm going to talk about work I've been doing with GoScript to bring it up to date and handling ICC-based colors much more efficiently and also making the interface to set profiles much improved. You can go ahead and do the next slide, Phil. So I talked about this last year a bit, and there'll probably be a little bit of repeat stuff just from the overview that everyone's up to speed. In terms of GoScript, I'll talk about the paste languages.
Michael, you're fading really bad. Are you pretty far away from the microphone?
I'll just talk a little bit louder. Sorry about that. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Now I'll go over the current ICC architecture within GoScript, and then go into detail about the new architecture. Still. GoScript, as you probably know, is a RIP. It's a rendering engine. It can do document conversion between vector formats, for example, from XPS to PDF, and between PDF and PostScript. It's an essential part of the Linux printing pipeline. We'd like to keep it that way. GoScript's a little bit unique in that there's a dual license, a GPL license, and also a proprietary license. And Artifacts owns the copyright to the code. So everyone's free to use it in the GPL as long as that code is also GPL. And the source and documentation is available at GoScript.com, including all the stuff for XPS and PCL. Next slide. So kind of an overview then graphically of GoScript. There's kind of this as being, there's three tiers to this. One is at the top is the interpreters, so we can have to put PDF, XPS, PostScript, level 3, various flavors of PCL, and then there's the graphics library, and then at the bottom here I have all the devices. We can have high-level devices which will understand certain commands. For example, if you're going from XPS to a PDF write device, and you have an image filled within some path, then that information, that vector content's maintained and written out to the PDF write device. There's obviously other devices like print drivers and then raster devices that don't understand anything. Yes, so the new color management will handle all the ICC, as I'll talk about in a minute, XPS, all the colors are defined in terms of ICC profiles, and the graphics library will handle all of them.
I'm asking specifically about the XML-based Windows color system.
Ah, okay, so yes, the Windows color system, ICC, well, Windows color system, yes, so those will only be handled the way the architecture is set up is it's very easy now to bolt on a CMM to GoScript. And one CMM that you could bolt on real easy is the one that's on Windows. Okay, so if you're running on a Windows platform, it would be real easy to hook in the WCS into GoScript, and you would get all the bells and whistles that come with that. So then it would handle those properly. If you're outside Windows, if you're using some other CMM with GoScript, then no, you won't get that. So if you check out the code base and you go and you check out the Ghost PDL project with Subversion, then what you'll see is that you'll actually, depending on what your development environment, if you happen to do it in Windows, which probably no one here does, there's actually now a nice solution file for Visual Studio. But anyway, what you'll see is that the PCL interpreter stuff is separate folder with all those files in there, and those make calls into the graphics library, which is in another directory where all the Ghost script stuff is. Okay. Okay. Next slide, Till. So I just wanted to touch briefly on page description languages and color spaces. Since GoScript has to support all of these, within PostScript Level 3, which has been around for forever, there's, of course, all the device-dependent color spaces, such as device gray, RGB, CMYK. And then there's the device-independent color spaces, which are defined by color space arrays, which are kind of a precursor to ICC profiles. And they end up mapping device values to CIEXRD color space. And then there's other color spaces such as separation and device end and some things that PostScript refers to as color spaces, which include the index and pattern, although those really aren't color spaces in the traditional sense. Within PDF, you almost have the same color spaces as PostScript, but at PDF 1.3 they added ICC-based types, and you no longer have these ICC or these old PostScript color management based like CIE based A, CIE ABC, CIE F, EFG. Those all go away. Instead, PostScript has Cal RGB and Cal Gray, and also adds a LAB type. And in PDF, it only supports 1.3 or 4 channel ICC profiles. In CPL, everything's RGB based, so everything's always assumed to be sRGB. And then in XPS and OpenXPS, and I believe SVG, although I'm not, I need to double check that, all colors are defined in terms of ICC profiles. And XPS allows up to color management is up to 8. Next slide. So if someone's doing color management today, they're going to be doing that with ICC profiles. I don't know of anyone running around doing color management with PostScript today, really. GoScript, right now in the current trunk of the code, it supports all the color spaces I mentioned, with the exception of within PDF 1.7, there you can use version 4 ICC profiles. And GoScript, the current code base does not support that version of profiles. Rather, it supports version 3.4, which is what you'd commonly find. It's pretty rare to run across version 4 ICC profiles today. But the change I'm making, GoScript will be supporting version 4 profiles. The current architecture is quite inefficient at use of ICC profiles, and that's kind of what one of the main things that drove the change that I've done. In addition to the fact that no one's doing PostScript color management anymore. Yes. Yeah. Next slide. So right now, that in the trunk, the way that color management handled is that if I have a particular color here in the input on the left, and I'm I have that color defined in terms of an ICC profile or a PostScript or PDF CIE mapping, then at the output here on the right, I have a color rendering dictionary, which is PostScript's way of defining color for a particular printer, for example, or display. And it can be, for example, you know, have a multidimensional lookup table. But the connection space between these devices is always CIEXYZ, or between these two. At least for with the PostScript type of model, which is basically what the trunk code, the main, you know, what GoScript today does. So, for example, if I have a color defined by an ICC profile, it gets mapped to XYZ and then goes to the color rendering dictionary. If it happens to be defined in terms of a PostScript color mapping object, then these are kind of loosely optimized into this object that's within GoScript called the joint CIE cache. So there's some optimization there, but it really only occurs when you have both PostScript objects at both defining the source and the destination. Next slide. So,
I'm saying if you assume that the XYZ is the interchange space, if I have an app or...
That's true. In PostScript color management, XYZ is always the interchange space. But that's obviously not true for ICC color management, and that's what I see today when you use this GoScript with ICC color management. If I have an RGB image here, and let's say I have an ICC profile associated with it that had a multidimensional lookup table and the profile connection space was LAB, then the way GoScript does this is it goes and maps to CIE LAB using the multidimensional lookup table, then does a functional mapping from LAB to XYZ, then maps that XYZ to the device space using the color rendering dictionary. And if it happens to be, the default. If you don't specify a CRD in GoScript, it uses sRGB based CRD. And if your device happens to be CMYK, then it does a mapping, putting PostScript mapping to CMYK. And then if you end up, of course, putting in a CMYK CRD here. And you had a multidimensional lookup table, then with this flow, you end up going through two multidimensional lookup tables. That's just not the way you want to do things. So next page, Till. So what we wanted to move to was more of a standard type of flow where you have every color is defined in terms of an ICC profile. So you basically have an ICC profile defined for the source color and an ICC profile defined for the output device, and those are crunched together in, with a CMM, and then today is just pushed through the single link transform that goes from source to destination. Now, in this model then, we still, GoScript passes support all the PostScript color spaces, etc. So the solution on that is basically everything gets converted to ICC profiles. So what I've done is I've written code that converts all those CIE PostScript color spaces to equivalent ICC profiles. And those get used and handed to CMM to do color management. Next slide, Till. So that was you know, a graphical of what we wanted to get to, and we kind of wrote down a whole list of goals that we wanted to have with the new architecture. We wanted to make it, a lot of our customers, they have their own CMM that they want to use full time. They want consistent color across all their products. So we wanted to make it very easy for them to hook in their CMM with GoScript. And to go along with that, we wanted all color spaces to be defined in terms of ICC profiles so that all the color management is being done there. Because most CMMs aren't going to understand PostScript color management. You know, if I handed them a CIDEFG dictionary, they might not know exactly what to do with it. But if I handed them an equivalent ICC profile that says the same thing, then they can handle that. We want to make sure that we cache transformations. So if I create a link transform that maps from one source to a destination, I keep that around because I'm probably going to end up using it again. And also any internally generated profiles. So if I'm generating profiles based on some PostScript objects, I want to keep those around. I don't want to have to keep generating those over and over. The way PostScript sometimes written is rather inefficiently. You have a set color space, you do some operation, maybe you pop the graphic state, and then later on you do some operation, then you reset the color space, and then if you you happen to be setting it to the same thing you already did, you don't want to go through. It's kind of expensive to create XPT profiles from PostgreSQL color objects. You don't want to be doing that over and over. There's this concept of having an ICT manager for ICT profiles, and I'll go into that a little bit more. Devices can communicate their ICT profiles to GoScript as well as have their ICT profile set. There's information fed to CMM as to the object type that's being rendered. So if the object type happens to be an image or graphics or text, the CMM will have that information and can do whatever the designer wants it to do, as well as the rendering intent. And so that can go into that computation that we've transformed. And that information has to be fed into the cache because you could have the same ICT profile with different rendering intents, different objects, and that. So you want those to be unique transforms. GoScript can operate, I'll explain this in a minute, but on the rendering end, GoScript kind of has this concept of a display list where you render to a temporary, if you're running out to a high resolution device, you actually don't. You end up rendering to separate bands in a temporary display list, and those sections can actually be rendered in a multi-threaded way, and we want to operate very efficiently in that environment. Name colors, we want those to be able to be in this architecture. Of course, within the ICT world, there's name color ICT profiles, which I don't know too many people who use, but we do have customers who use their own proprietary format to define, you know, name colors and how to map those to device colors. We want to be able to handle color management of device end colors. So as I mentioned before, in PDF and also in PostScript, you can't have ICT profiles for device end colors. And so we actually added that feature into GoScript. And we'll have flexibility to have proofing and profile overrides and device link profiles for use. For example, if you end up mapping all your output to swap CMYK, then at the end at the actual device layer, you could go ahead and apply a device link profile to go from swap CMYK to the CMYK for your particular printer, for example. Next slide, Till. So this is kind of a graphical view of this architecture. There's a folder at the base of the code that's labeled ICC profiles, and within there, there's a default profile for gray color, gray source colors, RGB, CMYK. There's also a LAB profile, since you run into the LAB color space within PDF. And then there's an sRGB and sGray profile. The reason being is that in JPEG 2000 images, which can be embedded in PDF, you can have color spaces that are set, enumerated color spaces that says, oh, you know, this color space is sRGB. It's not necessarily true that the default profile here may set something else in there. There's a concept of having a profile directory that can be specified where ICC profiles can be searched if one is specified, for example, for default RGB or something, it'll check in that directory. Here's the ICC manager where you have stored basically the device profile, a proofing profile, name color profile. You can have an array of device end profiles, okay, and it'll end up, what the code does is it ends up going out and when it encounters device end color space, it goes and checks in here to see if the colorant names happen to match the colorant names in device end space, and then it does the appropriate reorganization of the data, basically a permutation of the data if need be, to make sure the colorant orders are matching what the colorant orders are in the profile. And then default profiles for source colors for gray, RGB, and CMYK. Then there's the link cache and the profile cache. And we have CMM, which basically this is the if someone wants to bolt on their own CMM on the GoScript, there's a few functions that they basically have to interface that are relatively simple to do. It would probably take someone, for most CMMs, a few days to bolt on GoScript. Yes?
When I use GoScript to render like the PDF, let's say PostScript, can you tell about
So can you repeat the question?
From Postgres?
Yes. So okay, so how do you handle colors if you go from PDF to Postscript, for example? If I have an ICC profile, for example, in a PDF file, and I'm going to Postscript, which can't understand ICC profiles, the correct thing to do would be to go ahead and convert the ICC profile to one of the Postscript CIE color spaces and embed that into Postscript. Right now, that's not what happens, though. Right now, what it does is it pushes it, converts it to a device color, and that gets put into the Postscript. I haven't had much demand for that yet, but that's something that I noted that at some point I want to go in and fix. Now, the other way, going from Postscript to PDF, PDF can't understand the Postscript CIE color spaces, right? They don't exist in PDF. In that case, we do... I am right now converting those to ICC profiles, so those get embedded in the PDF as ICC color space. Does that make sense? No. The vector content's maintained. Yes.
Okay. How do you see that you have the
read profile and the So I'm going from PDF to Postscript. So if I have a path, okay, and let's say I'm filling it with a color that's an ICC color, okay, and that path, when it goes up to the Postscript write device, that path will still be represented as a path, so it's a vector path still. The color that gets filled, though, is no longer an ICC color. It's a device color now. It'll be a device. For example, if it was an RGB ICC profile that's applying the color in the PDF document. In the Postscript document, it's going to be a device RGB color that tells what to fill that path with. Does that make sense? What we should have happen is that it really should be a CIE ABC based color space in Postscript, which would be equivalent to the ICC profile. As long as someone's careful about it, they wouldn't lose anything. As long as they defined very carefully what the device profile was. The thing is, as soon as you go, though, to a device space, that color is going to be, for example, you could just go to device, to sRGB in that case, and the colors in Postscript document would be sRGB then. Right, exactly. So then you still have that portability at least to get, but you might have some gamma issues there. It depends. I don't think it does right now, and that's why I'm going to talk about coming up here pretty soon. I've got a slide with all the new command line options that specify this profile. I don't know, but I just know that as long as I hand it to me. So GhostScript does. So you mean caching of colors or caching of
caching of the transform?
Oh, that's all handled up here. So that's handled by GhostScript itself. So GhostScript. I'll show you. Let's do the next slide. So I'll show you. So basically, the way the typical operation would be that the graphics library will actually go up to the link cache, which is internal within GhostScript, and it'll say, I want a link, please, between this source profile and this destination profile with this rendering intent for this object type. And the link cache will check and see, do I have that? And it says, oh, I don't have that. So then it will go ahead and do a request to the CMM for that particular link, and then it'll get that. And when it gets it, it'll go ahead and put it into the cache. And then you know, other ones who request it will end up finding it. And then there's those are reference counted, so that the transforms are. So if there's some limit or something on how many links you're going to allow, then those will be when someone requests one, a check will be made to see if any could be freed or removed. Those will be removed. So the CMM will be notified that, hey, I don't need this one anymore at that point. But so there's kind of that interface layer between the graphics library and the CMM that exists. So basically, so once the link request is made, then it's obtained, and the graphics library goes ahead and applies the link to the buffers. And typically, the buffers are you know, if I'm processing an image, it might be a single scan line, or it could be a whole, if I'm doing a transparency buffer, because you can have different color spaces for a whole transparency buffer, then it's applied to that whole buffer during the transparency group pop. And when the graphics library is done, it'll notify the cache that, hey, I'm done with this link. This is basically a graphics overview of that. Basically, within the link cache, there's this, you know, table of hash codes, and the hash code is based on the source profile hash, the destination profile hash, and the rendering intent and the object type. And pretty soon in PDF, they're adding black point compensation, so that's going to be a new member of the graphic state. So that'll affect it also. And I said there, yeah. So link entries are all reference count. Next page. Name colors. So typically the way name colors are done, so within XPS and PDF, you can have and PostScript, you can have basically specify separation colors with particular names. For example, Pantone uncoded yellow. And to color match that, there is an ICC profile format for this, where basically within a table you have to have the CIELAB value for that colorant, and optionally you could have a device value. Now, the silly thing when they designed this, though, this was only for 100% valid colorant, okay? So if you have a percentage of this, 25%, that doesn't really tell you anything about what the LAB value should be or the device value. So people have come up with their own custom ways of doing this, and we basically have a hook in here that lets us do this. In this case, we have the call is that to the CMM is that hands it the link that you're going to use, and that link could be something handed from a real CMM, or it could be something if someone hooks in their own custom stuff for doing name colors. It could be some context pointer or something that's used. But basically what's handed to the CMM then is that object back, the tint value that we want for that name color, the color name, and then what should come back are you know, the device values. Okay. Next slide. All right. So I talked a little bit about conversion between PostScript and PDF color spaces. A couple things are that, you know, PostScript mappings are all one way. They're if I have a source color, I'm going from RGB or ABC to CIEXYZ. It was a little bit complicated to do this conversion because PostScript has basically, you can have anything in there. It has these procedural mappings for the different functions, and those all have to be sampled and they can have multi-dimensional lookup tables, and you can run the cases where you have PostScript color spaces that don't even include multi-dimensional lookup tables, but the only way to represent them really with an ICC profile is using multi-dimensional lookup tables. Next slide. So, for example, here I have, this is at the top here, is a PostScript CIABC space where you have the three inputs and some functional procedure mapping matrix, another set of functional procedure mapping matrix, and finally get to XYZ. And the most complicated form that you can represent in the XYZ form is below this. And there's no way if I let these functions be kind of general here, there's no way for me to represent that without using, you know, the next slide, Tim. I mentioned this briefly, of creating these color spaces or these equivalent ICC profiles, I don't want to do this repeatedly. So there's basically a hash code that's related to the resource ID in the object or in the source content. And whichever, basically, that that's the key that's used in the profile cache. Look up and see if that profile, if a profile has already been created for that color space. And if it has, then I'll go ahead and get it out of there. Next slide, Till. Device end, talked about that already a little bit. But GhostScript, this is kind of a little bit unique in that, as I mentioned, PDF and PostScript don't allow, there's no capability for in-color XPC profiles. XPS, of course, you have that. What the new architecture lets us do is that we can go ahead and specify on the command line a series of device end color spaces or ICC profiles, and then when those device end color spaces are encountered in GhostScript, we'll go ahead and check in the ICC manager to see if one has been specified, if it has, and we'll go ahead and use that in the data. Next slide, Till. Talking a little bit about the multi-threading operation of GhostScript. So if you run GhostScript to the display, to the screen, generally it's going to render in immediate mode and render the whole buffer. But if you're going out to, you have a case where you've got, you're rendering at 600 dpi, you want to go ahead and or if you're in basically a memory usage, constrained system, then you're going to want to go ahead and render. We render temporarily to a thing that we call the command list. I think commonly it's called the display list, but and that is basically can be a file on disk or can be a file in memory, and that it's basically another device. So if I had that diagram of GhostScript with the interpreters, the graphics library, and the devices, we have a thing we call the C-list writer device, where we end up writing out this display list or this command list of commands that indicate what bands all these commands fall into. So there's an equivalent object that's executed afterwards called the C-list reader that goes back and reads through that, and each band can then be rendered by individual threads. So go ahead and hit the next slide. So, for example, if I have a document, it's rendered then to the command list, and then depending if I have, for example, if I have four processors and I could launch, well, actually, it doesn't matter, if I have one processor, I could launch four threads, but generally, you want to use the same number of threads if you have processes, and each one can render an individual band of the image, or of the vector content that's in the command list. Next slide, Till. So the color management, we want that to operate very efficiently in this, and obviously table lookups and interpolations are kind of expensive. So we want to distribute those types of operations into the threaded rendering, which means that the ICC profiles themselves are embedded in that command list. So all the data in that command list or that display list is kept in the source code, and then it's not until the actual rendering of that display list that the colors are converted. Next slide, Till. So during the read phase, then when that is happening, each of the threads gets an initial same initial imaging state. And there's one cache that is shared between them. So they all those threads end up sharing the same transformation cache amongst them, since it's very likely that the same colors are going to be encountered in each thread. This is the part that I still have. This is probably the one piece that's still missing in the code that I have right now that I've got to add in. And I think I'll probably have this in by the middle of next month. At the latest, and I think the code will be ready to go into, be merged into the main trunk. But basically making sure that everything's thread safe in this environment is the last piece.
Michael, I have this code. This is re-entered.
What's that?
The code is also re-entered.
It's what?
Re-entered. Yeah, so I mean, I could have one instance of my driver using it, and this
GhostScript itself, the whole thing can't be run in
because for Windows, right?
Okay. So GhostScript itself can't be run multi-threaded, but GhostScript internally runs multi-threaded for doing this. We're in the process right now of cleaning up some things to make sure that GhostScript could be run or executed in a multi-threaded environment. No. It's actually less resources. It's actually compared to doing the old PostScript color management, the way things were done before. This is faster and what's that? Oh yeah, we have it running on little gum stick drive. Never mind. I'm sure it could run on the iPad. Yeah. Next slide, too. So I won't go on these. These are basically the APIs for the PMM. There's basically some operations for getting profiles. Next slide, Kel. There's operations for getting a link. This is basically the text of these are the functions that have been written some of the folding on their own PMM. Next slide. There's the transform ones for transforming a single color, a buffer of colors, or a name color. And then there's kind of standard information ones about the number of channels, the color space, the channel deployment, number of colorants. Next slide. And then some cleanup things if the CMM has required things for creation of the slide. Releasing links and releasing profiles. And then this is stuff that these are the new command line interface things. So if you specify different source default profiles for gray, RGB, and CMYK, you can have a whole pile of these if you have different device end color spaces in your particular document that you want to specify with the in-channel profiles. Specify the output profile. You can specify a directory to search for where these profiles are located, and then you can specify a proofing profile, name, color profile, and also a device link profile. Right now, these aren't hooked in quite yet. Those are going to be, I think the code's going to get merged in before these become active, but they're kind of active. Yeah, so that's something that I thought of too. The thing is, I'm not sure. I've got to think about how that interacts with what's specified within the document itself, too.
It's more of a parochial thing.
Yeah.
But I can imagine that in the pointing dialog is a rendering intent function.
Well, tell me what that you think that should do.
If you do it per object, it doesn't make sense for the whole document.
Right, exactly. So right now, the way it would be done is that the CMM has information about, you have a mixed content document that has text, graphics, and images.
So it's up to the application to send a file which also defines the window intent for each two.
Right. Yes, exactly. So I didn't want to get
that's good. One option less for the user to care about.
And just to see how it works with this, and then that's a handy one rather than having it hard coded within the code which I can't change.
Right. So would you expect then? Let me ask you this. Would you expect then if you had specified perceptual running intent, for example, then on the command line, that every object in there would get applied with perceptual running intent, and it would get override everything that's specified in the document.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, I can do that, yeah. Okay.
Basically, ignore the per object rendering
and just crunch everything.
Yeah.
All right. All right, yeah, we can add that. So performance-wise, this is, for example, the image that had a ICC source profile that was an RGB multi-dimensional lookup table, and it rendered about twice as fast with the new architecture compared to the old one where we're going through multiple transforms. Next slide. This was an LED image to find in a PDF document. And I've read it about three times in the last interview architecture. There was a lot of in the old PostScript code, or in the old code, it would take even though the image data is encoded 8-bit, 24-bit CIELEB, it was same time converting that to floating point CIELEB values and re-encoding it back into another form and then transforming it through the CRD, and it was going through multiple transformations. But now it just applies. It runs into this image and says, oh, it's a CIELEB color space. I'm just going to go ahead and use the LEB source profile, and it applies it. Next slide. One thing that was broken in the trunk was rendering intent. So basically I had a case where I had I made an ICC profile that had radically different renderings for depending on perceptual saturation or colorimetric intent, and push that through the trunk and end up getting the same thing for all four. And then next slide, Phil. And then with the new branch, with the ICC branch, the new code, it ends up doing things the way that I had expected to see them. Next slide. And so so with those three, there's the timing performance-wise. One thing, I've done a lot of improvements on, right now with the ICC branch, it's faster on shading and also on transparency compared to the trunk. Next slide. So if you want, you can check out the new code, which is in this version. Check it out at the address. Right now that I have an interface to a little CMS. That's the CMM that I'm using. And I'm planning on writing a few other ones since it doesn't take too long to do. I've just got a couple of things left to do to clean up, and I'm expecting to have this actually merged into the trunk by probably mid-May. And at Artifacts, we do releases every 6 months. We usually do a release in February and in August. So
always in time to get into the next Ubuntu. Always something like 3 weeks before feature.
But I'm hoping to get this. This is a huge code change. So I'm hoping to get this in place in the trunk by May, because I want...
Yes, the next Ubuntu is also not LTS long-term support, so when there are regressions, it's not so bad as we having regressions in your last February release.
Right, okay. And there are... it's difficult reviewing the regressions on this. We run around, I think there's 15,000 different tests when someone... of the code change, and it reports back that the regressions of this pretty much is every file, okay? And so what I had to do was go through run the old code for this to use color management. It wouldn't use color management unless you specified it to do so. You had my CUCIE color, and go ahead and use the associate the PostScript color objects with device RGB or device gray or device CMYK. So I had to do some special things to go ahead and force that the code, the trunk, to be run that way, and compare that to the branch, and also basically do a threshold, show me the ones that are the worst, and then I'll start going through those. And it's looking really good right now. There's only a couple minor bugs respect, and those are mainly in PostScript, some a couple oddball things, but for the most part, it's looking rather good, and quite good performance-wise. So my issue is I don't know exactly with for Till what you need. I mean, other than if you have those command line options, are you able to take that? And then
yes. I'm able to take that. I could do the necessary changes in PS2 raster, or in PS2PS, PDF2 raster, and in Fumatic Web. Because These are the PDF to us, the Chromatic Rip, our direct wrapper for GoScript script in the CUPS workflow. And in the case of PS2 Raster being used, then PS2PS embeds all this stuff into the PostScript data stream, and all your options you have shown are setting of PostScript variables, so embedding in PostScript data stream you can do with all these options.
Right, so where do you have all the profiles set then externally?
Yes, what one has to do is, CUPS is a web server in general, and it has naturally its own directory structure. You have user share CUPS. There you can put subdirectories. Perhaps there is already a profile subdirectory. There you would put in a subdirectory for each queue. You would put, for example, the IBC profile.
Right.
And then all the filters pick them up there and specify them on the GoScript command line. And this would be enough to get color management in.
My question is, though...
The filters read also the PPD file, because one queue can have more than one color profile, depending on the options, resolution, paper type, and
right,
so,
yeah.
the filter takes the right profile for the job.
Okay.
But how would we set the profile in? Where would the user get the information?
In the PPD file is described which profile is the right one for the printer to which the PPD file belongs, and for certain option settings, like one profile for 300 dpi on photo paper, another for 300 dpi on normal paper, and so on. And then the filter knows with which option the job gets printed through the PPD command line and so on, and it knows from the PPD which profile then to take, then it takes, and then it specifies this profile on the command line of GoScript when it calls GoScript.
Right.
And in the case of PS2 raster being used, this step has to be done by the PS2 PS filter of CUPS.
Or in the PPD, it should be
building
find the paper type and the
I think that one can, there are two or three options, and one can even perhaps select which option it should be. But I think there are not more than three options from which you can make the selection of color profile step dependent. Perhaps we must post a feature request at CUPS to allow any number of options on which the selection of color profiles can be dependent.
Yeah, I was also going to ask, available for the rendering system, we're going to override the if possible. We provide, for example, text profile for text and graphics for text.
Yes, this is an option. If you have profiles for text, for graphics, and so from the incoming, because in usually all incoming is PDF. You do not necessarily know what it is. What you mean is, I think it's rendering intent, or
yeah,
not?
Rendering intent.
Yes, yes. A good PDF file, I think, should contain the rendering intent, or not? If you have
yes,
a correctly made PDF
that.
File? You want to override that.
Yes, Michael yes. discussed a while ago,
yes.
Then it
will
be possible yes. to override. Then add another option in the command line.
Yes, then we must define a new CUPS option, which is consumed by the filters PS2PS, PDF2Raster,
yes.
or Chromatic Rip, depending on how the print we use the filter. And this overrides sends an appropriate command line option for the override to GoScript, so GoScript also needs a command line option for overriding this.
Yes. Right, that would be fairly easy to do.
Yes.
And
another thing is, for the profiles which are saved on the CUPS server, depend on the queue in a certain directory, I think they must also made be available somehow that the CUPS clients can download them, so that you can do things like soft proofing or not, that
right.
an application can take them, for example, and use them somehow in the preview or so.
There's another issue came up while I was talking to Richard Hughes, who has made the GNOME color profile tool, which is that it would be useful for his tool to be able to set a particular profile on a in a PPD, and it may be on a remote CUP server. So it would be good if CUPs would allow some way of uploading a an ICC profile in addition to uploading PPDs.
What do you mean? One thing is when I create the queue, I supply a PPD, and in addition, I supply the color profiles for the PPD, and then CUPS puts them into the right places in their directory structure. The PPD,
well,
for
example... The point is how to provide an ICC profile, because in the PPD, it's specified as a local file name. But if your CUP server is remote from you on a different machine, then you need to be able to upload a file to the CUP server and be able to reference that in the PPD.
What I think is that always the ICC profile should be hosted on the CUP server, and so the path in the PPD which you see should always be a path on the CUP server. So that perhaps you can, when you are a client and have this PPD, you can send this special IPP request to CUPS and get back the ICC profile from CUPS.
Yeah, I'm talking about the other way though. If you're doing your if you're on a client machine,
yes,
and trying to set the ICC profile for a particular device which is served by a CUPS server on a different machine, then you need a function using like the HTT put command to say I want to put this ICC profile onto the server, and I also want to put this PPD file which references that ICC profile file.
Yeah, if you want an IPP extension to get the profile, you also want one to be able to set the profile.
Yes, one thing is
exactly.
Setting the profile is something like configuring and creating print queues. It's a part of the print queue profile. And so I think it's enough if you are able to create a print queue, for example, you are logged into this server, then you are also able, as part of creating the print queue, setting the profile. Does not need to be able to set the profile. He is not supposed to configure the queue.
But that then assumes that you only configure the queue when you're actually physically located at the machine, and that doesn't work for a headless server, for example.
If on a headless server, you can also set up put profiles into directories, and they are accessed by scripts, by the filters. I think there's no problem with headless servers.
The point is that with Richard Hughes' tool, you need to be able to... Basically, what he wants to be able to do is, for any given CUP server, adjust the ICC profiles used for various different types of media for a particular queue. So it's clear how to do that from the PPD point of view by adjusting the attributes in it. What's not clear is how to set an ICC profile that's been, for example, downloaded from a manufacturer's website.
Oh, yes, it's for using the menu tray.
Now I understand. If one of the users in the network, on the server, there's everything which you need for the manufacturer stuff, coming with the manufacturer's driver package, but now in our network, there's one client user who has bought a special paper which comes with a profile, and he wants to print on this paper and use the profile. Then we need a CUPS option, which allows to send a CUPS custom profile.
Yeah, so one way that Richard and I talked about doing it was if there was a special resource name, like the existing admin resource for the configuration files. So if there was like /admin/ICC or something like that that could be used in an HTTP put request, then I think that may be sufficient.
Yeah. Yes. Can one also send an ICC profile as an IPP attribute? For imagining it's a very, very long string option that one sends this as an IPP attribute so that one does not need to modify cups.
Nope, because an IPP string attribute can't be longer than 1023 octets. You can only send the URI. You can't send the content.
Yeah. So then one really needs to modify cups in a way that one can send a profile by HTTP, put a job-specific profile.
It would be possible to add operations, first-class operations, to IPP, the protocol, to access resources. 10 years ago, we started to do that, didn't finish. 2 years ago, we did finish in web services, and there's a full protocol for a resource service, and it's perfectly possible to make IPP protocol operations that give basic access to that service.
Okay, that's interesting. That's another option for how to proceed with it.
Yeah, the MFD resource service is worth taking a look at because it's very rich. It includes the ability to upload firmware to devices, by the way.
Yes. So that, for example, a client user can send firmware.
Heck, the printer.
This I don't know. The PPD attributes for color profiles, the PPD attributes, they are defined in the CUPS PPD extension specification.
It gets read from the, it gets feed to filter,
I must look, it can be that, I think the old CUPS raster filter even reads them, the current CUPS raster output device of GhostCup even reads them. But this is all this old awkward workflow of color management at GhostCup, which he is replacing. The workflow he has shown on one of his first transparencies, which goes a lot forth and back with format here, that you are here on RGB and here you are on RGB again.
I'm a little bit naive about how things work on Linux with ICC profiles. So, on the user interface, if I'm printing or the printer dialog, can I go ahead and will I be able to set
definition?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Right.
Pop up from the unit that it's consuming.
At the moment, it's fine.
what is the name? Getting it into desktop and applications and this stuff. One thing was we have originally intended this session also for my tweet, and now he's not here anymore. It washed away. And do we have something which we can pull to this? Yes, and the other thing is the presentation of HP, which is missing, which was planned for after the break, but could only for the callers. I don't know whether someone will call in after the break and expect that the HP session will come.
HP session?
Yes.
Oh, there it is.
Yes, this is the remaining the remaining stuff of the topic.
So, Till, the other thing we could do is your final topic, what about a 3-day tutorial and wrap up and so on?
Yes, we could do that now. As it seems that with the printing dialogue we are completed. This extra session was more for Mike Sweet. Yeah, and he's not here, and therefore we could have now do the conclusions of the printing summit and discuss whether the manufacturers want to have a 3-day seminar about uploadable drivers or not, driver design and uploading printer drivers and so, where one could do hands-on and things like that.
Well,
at this first day of the printing summit. Yes, if the printer manufacturers is here from HP, Epson, you from Kyocera, and also George Leo from Lexmark, and they from Kyocera. So yeah, and now
confused.
Yeah. Think horses. George Leo from Rico. Whether they are interested in having a 3-day seminar about making printer drivers in LSD compliant printer drivers.
For me, still, I'll get back to you on that.
One thing is naturally, one has to think about two things. One thing, would it help you? Would you like to go to such thing? And the other thing, naturally, is which will take longer to decide, is would your employer support it by letting you travel to that?
I'm not sure.
Well, yeah,
depending
where you want to travel to. You're in
the other side of the
hill, so. Right, and the people who write Epson drivers who are writing LSP compliance right now would have some experience.
Yes.
If you had a session, are in Japan, not here.
Yes.
Okay.
And so probably even they do not know English, because there are always other people who are talking with me.
And how far is it from you?
And they are passing everything on to the Epson people. And they don't
we all go to Japan.
Establish the contact directly between
here.
Yes, one thing is, this I have also thought about, running such a seminar in Japan, because there are most probably more interested people than here in the States.
A lot of the drivers are not written in the States.
Yes, yes.
From any.
Yes, yes. Even HP and Lexmark.
They're all written in the
States. Yes, HP has moved in the last days.
India, right? For
HP?
Yeah. Yeah, but it's much easier if you don't have it here.
Yes, yes. And India is also more close to Japan than to the United States.
Yeah.
So then probably now the best is to hold this seminar in Tokyo, and then everyone comes to Tokyo, because only in the eastern part of the world printer drivers are manufacturers develop printer drivers.
Shorter the distance of the vendor.
Yes, yes. I thought this way too.
It's longer for you maybe, Bill, but okay.
Yes, but this is one person, but not 10 or 15 persons.
Well, no, if it means them coming here, it's still going to be one person.
I'm sorry, the battery is running out on my phone, so it was nice talking to you guys.
Bye. They would come, because that's the train right to them, and they would, more probably willing to share their experience with making the LRP drivers.
Right, probably the shorter, the lesser the cost, the better.
Yes, I think the best compromise for a venue is if I give the seminar in the Linux Foundation Japan office.
Yeah,
so I have all the time already thought about that this is the best way.
Yeah,
it's even better because now I know that many American manufacturers develop in the eastern part of the world.
Might be left first, probably one or two come from the left. Oh, yes,
yes,
hour and a half.
Yes, and so we could. What do you think? Would you like to have such a kind of seminar from HP?
Can we say moving it to the east? That's what you're doing.
Well, if you have one, you want one to begin with.
Would you go to, if such a seminar would be offered by Open Printing, would you go to them?
To a
3-day seminar in Japan about designing drivers and making LSB packages and that.
In Japan.
Yes, so the time frame of...
Oh, time frame, yeah.
Ah, yes. For example, in fall of this year.
Almost, okay?
It's simple.
That's pretty far away.
Yeah.
What I want to ask is more, do you think that this makes sense and...
It depends on what the plans we have for LSB.
For this kind of meetings are concentrated there. What? Yes, yes, you can attend when your employer updates your server. For me, it's no problem if there's one person more.
It doesn't sound like you're very faithful.
What? Yes. So, another thing is perhaps we should write up which action items came out of the meeting.
I will send out a mail note when I get back.
Yes.
I will just summarize them and you guys can decide whether you're going to keep the action item, shoot the action item, or don't shoot the messenger, okay?
Okay.
Please. And you can add to the list if I put that one to, or we should add one. But this is my only confusion. I'm not playing.
In terms of the timing of the Common Print Dialogue release, which I think, Kate and Peter, you're hoping for August, is that right?
Yes, we are not very much confident that we will conclude in that time if we don't find someone who pays last full time for 6 months.
Ira did not ask what year, okay?
What?
Did not ask what year.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't ask what year. Actually, I was wondering in terms of interim open printing meetings or smaller meetings if you should want to be thinking till in August or September of a meeting based in Europe on the topic of Common Print Dialogue.
We do not really plan a meeting, talked about who is concentrated where, and we found out that printer driver developers for manufacturers are concentrated in the east of the world, and the usability people are in Germany, in Berlin.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's the amount of what the next topic is to discuss in the group is higher up. So if you have ideas, I'll add it to the list of action items. Maybe I'll add some myself. But
actually, the next time we meet, everybody to take an opinion of the manufacturer.
Yes. Yes, yes.
Right.
Yes, perhaps I put up a preliminary agenda and ask the people whether they would like to.
And normally I would not propose two of these meetings a year, but a lot has changed lately. So I don't know, I might actually put in another one. The Google, the cloud, and that a lot of things might change. We might want to meet at the...
Yes. So a general printing meeting in fall this year.
Maybe.
Yeah, but more focused on the manufacturing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I need to tell you for that.
And at which place on the world?
I could stop the in white?
What?
Well, that's what I think. Still in fact, proposed.
We'll make it
out. The ones that I told before to all the manufacturers, what is
that we want an agenda, so that is very what we want.
We don't have a meeting, we only have one time.
Yeah.
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 I'll put it on the action item.
Yeah.
Another
so
meeting.
We get to actually have the agenda in front of the public.
Lynn, I didn't catch much of that, but you're putting on the action item list a possible second general meeting of open printing this fall?
Yes.
You might want to capture that the PWG has an October meeting at Lexmark the 19th through the 21st of October. If you wanted to get a bunch of manufacturers present, that's a good way to do it.
Yes, this is would be a good idea to hijack the PWG.
No, I actually meant to have a day after or a day before and short joint plenary, short joint plenary like we used to do in previous years.
Yes. So one day for open printing and one joint plenary.
Yeah.
Get the ideas implemented. And
there's really no one volunteering for working for printing stuff. And so that one it only gets forward if someone implements the stuff when he gets paid for it. For example, Common Printing Dialogue. There's no one who voluntarily brought it forward. And so perhaps it's one thing which perhaps the mostly aimed at the printer manufacturers, whether they could perhaps talk with their managers, and so whether one can somehow support the development of free software in printing.
Oh, I see, that's what it did, okay.
I think in last dialogue this is already fixed. And then you have here the properties button. The KDE printing dialog.
Okay.
And here you can choose the paper size and the margin.
The orientation.
And the orientation. And here you have the PPD option. And to change the PPD option, you click on it.
Yeah.
Then you click here on the right.
Yeah.
I think double click. And then you get a drop down box. When you're after double clicking, click more one time, then you get a drop down and can set the option.
So those are the properties, but there's also options if you come to this.
Yes, and then
the
here's option. And here you can... Pages per sheet, start, end, yes, banner pages, page label, here's no page range.
Go back to copy.
Yes. And page range, even odd pages, copy, collate, and reverse on this.
Who is the
designer
for this?
The QT developer at Trolltech.
Did Jimmy come yet?
No.
They have it working.
And this is the problem when things like KDE are completely rewritten, because then they don't have enough people anymore to rewrite everything, and then one usually has somewhere regression.
What is GNOME?
What?
GNOME
Sprint Dialog I can also show. Yeah, GNOME is the GTK print dialog. Yes, here, this is the PDF viewer of GNOME. And you choose print, and this is the print dialog. On the first tab, set the queue, and then you set here copy.
Page range is on the other side.
Yes, page range is here. Collate is also available. Then here you set the page.
We have duplex, Anna, collation.
Yes, the selected printer has no duplex. And here the page handling. But where are the PPD options? Have to select another printer. Which is locally defined. Ah yes, and here these are PPD options.
So when you use Firefox on GNOME, Firefox will use GTK for dialog.
Yes.
When you use Firefox on KDE, will that use QT dialog?
No, it also uses the GTK dialog.
Oh, really?
As long as there's no show KDEs, because the whole Firefox is a GTK application, and the dialog is still an integral part of the application.
So Congo uses QT print dialog?
Yes. Here's a poster printer. Here you see the tab is added for every group in the PPD file. And this in each group makes the tab. And the first four tabs are always the same because they carry the CAPS option.
All the office,
they use their own print dialog. Yes, yes.
Are they
based on GTK?
GIMP has two. One's the GTK dialog, and you can also use the Gutenprint dialog as a plugin.
Oh.
This I don't know. But we can see it afterwards. At first I saw the printing dialogue. I'm print. Yes, this is the printing dialogue. It's different. They have changed it.
It's their own deal.
Yes, it's their own, but the last time when I have opened it, it looked different. So this must have come with the last with
like
recent update.
Yeah. Okay.
So let's take a printer which has some more options.
So
what should we need?
Yes, and there we have properties. Ah, this part is the same, yes. This part is the same, the only thing it looks like that they have written it with GTK now.
So you click it now?
Oh. Yes, you have here the PTD. You click on properties. You click on properties, it is as before. It's simply a little bit different look and feel, but principally the dialogue is as before. You click on properties, then you get this one. One tab is for the paper tray, paper size orientation duplex, and the other tab is for all the remaining PPD options.
Well, we have three printouts,
And OpenOffice does not even use option groups in the PPD, so imagine how it will get when you have 200 options with a Gutenprint PPD file.
Now, in Windows, all
paper
is
always
it never works.
It's controlled by
the
PDF and then
use
after
read the game. Now, the option
that
yes. Look here, this is now a Gutenprint. This is how OpenOffice presents you the option for Gutenprint. And when you click on add an option on the other side, you can choose the value.
Simply shows that it could even be bothered with the dealing with this stuff. It's still going to be the most generic way possible. So we had a tour of the printing dialogue, but where did you want to go to?
Nothing new, George.
Now I'm only looking on what libraries OpenOffice is based on, whether there's something like GTK or so.
I think Red Hat made a patch.
But the dialogues look a little bit like that GTK is used. But this has so many sub-libraries and so on, probably it's difficult to find it out. The main executable of OpenOffice is not linked with a GTK. Or they are statically linked with GTK because they use another version than the distro. I know also that in Red Hat Linux, that there in the open office is patched and the open office printing dialogue is replaced by the GTK one.
Yes.
Tim, are you there?
I am.
Tim?
Yes.
Yes. You, Do you know whether in Redhead it's the case that the printing dialog of OpenOffice is replaced by the GTK dialog by Petzl?
It certainly has been the case. It doesn't seem to be any longer.
It was there, but it's currently back to the original, or what?
Yeah.
Yes.
What's the reason for that? Why you can find out?
I'm not sure why it changed.
Yes, probably I've also seen on the screencast now the demo of bad printing dialogue. And so we see really the necessity of a new printing dialogue. And especially someone who paid someone for writing it.
The thing that I don't really get with the common printing dialog is
what?
The thing that puzzles me with the common printing dialog is the tags versus tabs. I don't really get the need for having tags for the different options so that you can have these sort of overlapping groups of options, rather than just having, you know, separate tabs or separate, you know, display groups in the dialog for the various different groups of options as defined in the PPD.
Peter, it's your question.
So, okay, presented about this, where I've written this up also in my blog, it was actually visible in the demos around here. When you go around the tabs to change one or two or three parameters, then it's actually a numbers game that you end up with. Say you have to change one parameter, 83% chance that you're in the wrong tab. If you want to change two parameters, it's like two-thirds, so 76%. Change three parameters, you actually have a chance of still more than 50% that you have to go around. You have to do three tab changes to change three parameters. So everything cuts up, although it's for this user, it was actually connected parameters that they had to set. One thing that the testing really shows, and this is something I reported yesterday, is that users really appreciate that when you say, oh, I want to see the stuff that belongs to page layout, but also the stuff that has to do with color, that both of it is actually visible in the dialogue. And the benefit of it is, of course, that once it is set like that, you can leave it like that in the dialogue for that application, so the dialogue comes up right every time that you actually use that application. That's what behind the tagging. And what's behind the tagging is that you no longer simply have to filter only on technology terms, but you are able to introduce something like, I'm interested in paper saving, and you can support that, which takes it which additionally to the traditional technology terms takes it in a much more human direction that people want to address in print dialogues.
Or to GTK print data, or to QT print data, or to coming from Ghana.
Jim, have you any idea about that?
What was the question?
I'll move Tim closer to you.
Yes, Tim, we bring you to class.
The question is, whether we can find out what makes Red Hat to change back the OpenOffice print dialog to the original print dialog. Because in the future, if we decided to patch applications to use, let's say, GTK print dialog or Qt print dialog or common print dialog, we want to know, okay, what do we need to do to make that change?
Well, I mean, I think Kaelin McNamara would be the person to ask, because he maintains the OpenOffice.org package for Fedora. I think one of the things we did run into with switching over from the OpenOffice native print dialog to using the GTK Plus print dialog was that although the print dialog in itself works fine, and OpenOffice.org works fine, the sort of the integration of the two, there are tiny little bugs that you run into, and they're subtle and difficult to find through testing. Things like exactly how the print output is generated within OpenOffice, if it makes sense then to put IPP attributes on it, and so that you can say things like, I want two copies and I want it duplexed. Well, is it going to be that if you've got a three-page document, you're going to end up with the last page of the first document duplexed onto the first page of the second document, and all kinds of troublesome issues like that. So I think there was a bit of system integration problem with it. I think we did manage to iron most of them out, though. So I'm not entirely sure what prompted Kaelin to rip that out.
We're on the discussion about applications adopting.
Yes.
CPD.
No, application adopting a new print dialog.
What CPD is?
Yes, this case, OpenOffice in Red Hat was for a very, very long time patched so that it used the GTK dialog and not its own dialog. And they have dropped this patch. They have OpenOffice back to the original dialog.
Obviously one of the terms is, I have a print dialog, it works fine, I don't need anything else, right?
No, what I see from Tim's comment is that there's no feedback to the applications from the print dialog. Is it right? Something like.
What do you mean, no feedback?
No, that wasn't what I was saying. It was more a case of assumptions that had been made by the OpenOffice.org developers when they were using their own native print dialog were no longer true when using the GTK print dialog. So it wasn't just a simple case of switching out one piece of code for another. It was where that interface between the application and the dialog was. A few things broke down, that's all.
Fine-tune their print dialog to meet their application needs.
Well, exactly, because the OpenOffice dealing with documents.
It doesn't really matter, it'll happen with any application.
So exactly what kind of interface we need between the application and print dialog?
Yeah, what are the requirements?
We haven't talked about that in detail, I guess.
Yes, that's true. Lars has designed a debug interface, but we never talked in a bigger group about what it must
be. No, we never talked to application vendors.
yes. What they want to send to the dialog. And
well, it's also a matter of the application vendors have been many, every summit like this have been invited personally to come here and also talk about that. A mechanism is built in for them to completely do what they want. It is designed just like I'm bringing together many groups who have to be happy with this print dialog. The applications are also part.
Application vendor right now. They care. This is OpenOffice, right? What other applications do we care about?
Oh, you would definitely would like GIMP to use it.
You want to use the GTK Cloud dialog.
And also PDF viewers, like
the interaction designer of GIMP.
I have a word there.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, and PDF viewers like Evans or Popular. most bug reports which I see are when people do not succeed to print a certain PDF file which they open with EBINs. So
okay.
All of EBINs people print a lot, so PDF.
But EBINs are on GNOME, right?
Yes, it's the standard PDF viewer of GNOME.
I don't really understand why people have a problem with this. Printing is not the application's primary function. They don't care. They got something that works, and they're going to stick with it because they're working on their app. So, I mean, that's a common thing that happens. You do it in Windows. You have to use the print dialog because that's the only one there. You don't make your own. But in Linux, everybody does their own thing, and now they've got something printing, and it works well enough for their application. They're back working on their app, which is document writing or drawing or whatever. They're not worried about the print dialog anymore.
Yes. Unless the environment changes, which is what we're doing.
The same with the dialog because the operating system is applying it. And our intention
is
it's not the only one, Till.
A primary example of this kind of thing is with the GNOME document viewer program, EVINCE. Basically, it's the main function of it is to show, for example, PDF documents on the screen, and it's also got a print function. But I think when the print function was originally written, the print dialog, or perhaps even the print spooler at the time, was primitive. And so there's a lot of code in EVINCE that deals with actually converting PDF documents into PostScript. And so it does this all itself in the application and then sends the PostScript to through the print dialog and on its way to CUPS, which means it's doing far more than it needs to do in order to get things to work. And in fact, it makes things not work because of, interactions between converting PDF to PostScript and options such as duplexing and collating, all that kind of thing.
Tim, even worse. Currently, the newest versions of EVINCE follow the PDF workflow, so they send PDF when you click on print, but they do not use the intuitive way passing through the incoming PDF. They re-render it, and there comes out something much longer, much more awkward than the original file. And this makes GoScript very often choke on it.
You're off
also
on a tangent. You're off on a tangent. The discussion is why applications won't go to a particular print dialog.
So is Evans using GTK plus print dialog now? I know, like I said, GNOME print dialog are not sort of legacy, so many GNOME applications are still using GNOME print dialog, not using GTK plus print dialog.
But guys, the process is not simple, but it's predictable. The two platforms, KDE and GNOME, start deprecating the old ones and go over to the new ones. The new applications have to see the point of that and adapt to that, but a deprecation will help them to move them along. That's the
two. Convince KDE and GNOME to deprecate their print dialogs.
Yeah.
Okay.
As to
replace
them.
As the feedback right now from KDE and GNOME is, great stuff you're doing, just send us the patches. They won't lift a finger to develop the whole thing, but they also see that it's a million miles better than what they have right now. So it is an environment. There are only two environments, and these environments need to move on. Some applications, like Firefox is doing its own thing, OpenOffice does its own thing, needs really direct counseling and hand-holding and begging and borrowing to move over.
Here to have.
Hmm?
No really discussion to have here. It's already a mechanism. If it's already moving, then what's the discussion? Well, George, we don't... What's the discussion, George?
How this is going to move
on? If KDE and GNOME will adopt it when it's mature, why wouldn't the apps adopt it if it's mature?
I'm not trying to understand what makes them adopt it.
That's the discussion.
Then what do you want to know?
Maybe that's what I missed. Getting it into the desktops and the application. That was the discussion. So what would you like to discuss since that one's closed?
So nowhere to go. taking a bet on if there's a way to go, how do they go proceed?
It is proceed. He needs money to finish it, but that's something else.
No, he's doing he's not doing the application integration part.
No, he's
that's
going
to death. Dbus, right?
Yes, the interface between the application and the dialogue is Dbus.
Oh, you mean with application integrator who goes in and writes code to take care of
someone who modifies the application that they call the print dialogue through Dbus and not through the toolkit libraries.
Right, so you need some Google Summer of Code student to hack at one of the applications and do it.
Yes, I've opened a project idea on the Google Summer of Code, and no one applied for it.
That's a separate problem.
Have you talked to application vendors to ask them whether they want to use Dbus?
No, the question is, do they want to use dialogue? Not the mechanism by which they communicate with the dialogue. And since the methodology binding is important, whether or not they'll even use it.
Yeah, so for instance, Till and Lars went last. The last Linux, what was it in Berlin, the Linux Expo?
This Linux talk, yeah.
Linux talk.
In July. It was in June already, I think.
Sort of May, June last year. They went there, and also Lars is doing their talk this year, for instance, and yeah, loads of favorable feedback, and cool and fine, and that.
So I have another longer-term question. Who's going to be the long-term maintainer of this dialogue?
No.
Yes.
Still?
This is also a question because
we know that when the dialogue is available.
One of the problems in Linux is that if I have a problem, who do I call?
There's no implementer now who's going to maintain
it. Who fixes the box which one we call
the box
filler?
Yes.
Yeah, it looks to me that if we want to have a feature supported in printing, let's say they want to spend like $2,000 to have a one bug fix, a one feature supported, but it's easier for us to just fix GTK Cloud print dialog or fix
the point is, if it's at OpenOffice and it's an OpenOffice print dialog and there's a problem, they'll contact OpenOffice.
Yes.
And they'll say the print dialog doesn't do what I want to do, okay? But now it's the common print dialog. Who's going to support this long term? I haven't seen any long term support here. We have one college student and two open usability persons and Till, who does everything already.
Well, the problem is a bit the same like what happens if the file open dialog doesn't work correctly. Then first the applications get a bug file, and then they need to push it into the desktop environment that actually provides it.
Yes, of course.
So it goes in the KDE and the GNOME database of a bug.
So that says the KDE and GNOME are going to be responsible for the common print dialog.
Yes,
Course we know that nobody wants to move a finger to.
No. Still, if you do that, if you have a separate, if you have two different people maintaining it, two different desktops, it's no longer going to be called common.
That's true. Well,
it will diverge by definition.
You know that nobody will lift a finger to fix that bug because it's like the whole plain thing does not exist thing. So it all comes back to.
It'll vanish then.
It will. Well, we push to some It will.
It will
be a mechanism to get it back to Till, basically.
Well, if Till fixes it, fine. But if it doesn't, then it's going to go to a corner. Oh, it's not working.
It's the last time to fix those clip files.
I'm sorry, these are real Linux problems and why print vendors have problems. And we don't want to be blamed. We don't want to say, oh, I'm printing to the Epson printer and it's not doing what I want it to do. No, don't call me. Because it's not,
Well,
use our driver, download it from Avisys, and use that one.
So, Glenn, I think what you're pointing out is we have two problems, and they're both funding. One is we need to fund Lars and others to finish the Common Print Dialog reference implementation. And then, two, we need somehow a way that, not as a one-time thing, but ongoing, year over year, print vendors or someone funds some maintenance for that Common Print Dialog, because there will be maintenance. needed.
Yeah, I think part of that also, too, I mean, Ira, is that you need a maintainer.
That's what I meant.
I asked that. You need a maintenance money.
Mm-hmm.
But
yes, but you also need a maintainer.
I'm going to work on it this year, and then I'm going to go off, and then next year you're going to work on it, and then, no, that'll get crazy.
Yeah, and depending on how well the code is commented, pretty soon it isn't maintainable.
Well, trust me, my coding style is not the same as yours, not the same as Till's, not the same as anybody else's, so that'll be exciting.
I mean, if you look at it today, then the most reasonable, rational plan is to get Lars to get on it long-term by really making it a job.
What kind of job?
Making it a job for him out of it.
Not
so
he's got a job.
Hmm?
Yes, he has a job at the university.
Yeah, that may not be his career.
And this will not his permanent job.
He's graduating. He's writing his thesis.
Yeah. So is it an action? Do the print vendors want to adopt this thing?
No, I
sponsor
it?
Yes, yes.
No, what I think is we should have printing dialogue, and the funding eventually come from Linux Foundation, and Linux Foundation is founded by printer vendors.
Right.
And a number of printer vendors are already member of Linux Foundation.
Right.
So theoretically, Linux Foundation should maintain this module, but the key point is because of limited funding printer manufacturer provided to Linux Foundation, we should make the print dialogue easy and cheap to maintain. Maybe.
Well, and there was an issue about how to fund the Linux Foundation for printing only, and Epson did figure out a mechanism by which you could, I think Rico's a part of Linux Foundation.
Yes,
they're part of Linux Foundation, not open printing. So the money goes into their general pool, and it may be used for other things.
No, just like Rico did in the past, is do a direct contribution to Linux Foundation.
Printing.
No, to Linux Foundation, and on the condition that the funding
only
is only
goes,
used
right.
For
the print manufacturers who don't know that, there is a mechanism by which you can just fund the open printing part and not some other obscure part of Linux Foundation, which the printer manufacturers may be exciting, but they're not interested in funding, okay? We have enough problems.
HPS also does a similar thing. They have
they
done
have
direct contributions, yeah.
And
they have big logos on Linux Foundation website. That's a
printing website. Yeah, but they're not small contributors. You're interested in many. I mean, HP in general is probably interested in many parts of
yeah.
The management told me that HP is only funding the Linux Foundation in general, but not open printing. Therefore, they told me on the new website I should drop the HP sponsorship.
So HP is sponsoring too general to be even mentioned in relation to printing.
Yes.
I think there needs to be a dialogue between the print vendors. And I think we'll do it off.
Or even they sponsor also one work group of the Linux Foundation, but not open printing.
Well, I think that obviously, there needs to be dialogue between
If printer vendors can see a clear roadmap, okay,
right.
We just spend, let's say, $10,000, and you can down. We can see a clear roadmap. By month one, we can achieve something. By month two, we can achieve something. And by month six,
on top of that, we will have to go to our management staff, and we'll have to have an ROI. There has to be a return on investment for here, and a reason to do this, because remember, this is a 1% of the market to us.
Yeah.
Or less.
Yeah, exactly, but I think we can put something together that has, you know, rather than it being shown, could demonstrate some kind of such a...
Let me rephrase the 1% a different way. It's in the noise to most of our companies.
Yeah.
Okay, and they're not, and unless I yell or George yells or somebody yells, and you can only yell so many levels up, nothing really is going to happen. So it's really very hard.
I see
I would ask you, I understand that, but if you're saying you're going to have to yell, you're saying you need to put them together, you need to maybe indicate what would help you to show it off.
Oh, no, I've been doing printing for 20 years. I just can't know what the manager...
I'm unsure of if you're asking for something or not.
I'm not asking for anything. I'm telling you the facts that this is hard for us to get money for this kind of a project because it's not a big market. We Epson supports, I believe Rico does and the others. We support Linux printing. Go to Avesys and download the driver. They're all there.
Others still can do something, either contributing money or contributing manpower. I think marginally we can do a little bit. But I think that right now the project itself is too big for the limited resource to cover.
Well, there's no resource now. Very limited.
I think there's also, when you see what the printing brings together, it brings together, so first of all, we're really solving a problem for the two desktop environments that don't want to lift a finger to do this, and both of them have money. It of course ties it together, the printers with the desktop environments that we'll be doing. So I think it's also fair enough that it comes from any environment. Somebody like Ubuntu has a real interest to make things better and not live with the old crap that they have right now. So that's also a source where it should come from. So that's Ubuntu to the desktop environment and printer manufacturers.
The, the manager is going to ask, how many printers am I going to sell? Exactly the first question they're going to ask me. How many printers will it sell?
In a different way, see, for example, some vendors volunteers to sponsor, and at the same time, they'll have some requirements which they may want you to implement.
Right.
Would you cater for such things? Well, I mean, it would depend on what the requirements for the European
exactly. Right, if it's not as omnious as it sounds, then...
I think
the thing is, by definition, as I said, this thing works with everything. The mechanisms are there to work with any kind of thing you want to be in there.
We've all been doing this for a very long time. We know how to work with everything. I mean, we've been printing to from every application there is to every kind of thing.
Hey, you want to know if I think this thing prints with everything, because you're like still after 3.5 years looking at me as a rookie in this field, so, which I'm not. But the thing is, yes, we take that if certain functionality needs to be in there, it will be integrated in a way that doesn't turn the thing up to hell, the same kind of hell that you've seen on the over there just some moments ago of just added things on top of each other. So that means proper integration of what you need for this thing actually to work.
It must support our customers and our devices.
I can understand, I tend to agree with George that we can do something, but it's not going to be big, and it's not, we can contribute, but we can't promise that it can be big, so we can show from the limited resources that we can gather if it matches to the one that we're going to achieve with CPD. So at least we can cover everything.
Maybe we need a finer definition of what the next level, next activity
is. What Rico has done in the past when the economy is still good, we hired an intern student in France to fix some KDE print box. And we hired an intern and fixed some specific problems and we see the result. And next time if we have seen another improvement also make, we can do similar things.
Right.
But for this project, open a common print dialogue. I mean, this scope is just too big for an intern in a summer like others can do.
And realize that Rico has a different market than Epson is. So we have a different perspective. So, and Lexmark is now doing mostly into business. We're still in consumer. HP is still covering most of the gamut. the whole thing, right? Consumer to business. So it's difficult, you know.
So what I suggest is, let's say, if I want to, let's say, take the example. Pagering doesn't work in Qt or whatever. And we see that, okay, to fix that problem, we don't need like $5,000. And we can see,
right now, as I understand the pagering, the last demo I saw, it would click up and you'd get all these extra bullets would start adding, you know, start popping up, right? The old pagering used to be page 1, 3-18, and then done.
Well,
that would give me page range. Phase
that's
one,
what
yes,
I showed. That's
what
first shown was yesterday. If you, paid
I think the first one how it kept adding.
Not anymore.
No, not anymore. Okay.
And
so
it's probably going to work over
if we can
simplify
a few of the features that I don't know.
Folks, it would be a good idea to take 10 minutes break because in 10 minutes we're supposed to start the HP presentation.
All right. Thank you, Ira. We're on break.
Yeah.
I think in the end we've all heard. We'll try to communicate and see what comes out.
We'll communicate
to our men.
One question I have is, now there are two things. One is that sponsorship through money, another thing is through manpower, right? So
that cannot be donated, and it's our manpower. You can donate developers, although I would say that the best way to make the project slower is to get three different programmers together on this project who will start reading up on
the
material.
You have no, from a software point of view, you have no development. I mean, there's no plan, there's no milestones, there's no deliverables, there's no nothing. It's just kind of open-ended right now. It's being worked on, I'm doing this, and then I go off and do this part of it. So it's a little open-ended from a software development point of view. So it would be hard to assign manpower, and then it would be very hard to assign money, because I'm not throwing money over a fence without some kind of, in May I expect to see this come out. That won't happen. Without a schedule and without some deliverables that are definable and realistic,
so
not going to happen.
I
realize that. Peter's not the person, but who is?
Sorry, what was?
One thing, you have machines. Put every burden on you, because you are just doing the dialogue design and the...
I'm doing the dialogue design, and yes, I would also like my company to be, for a stretch, to be paid for it. When we worked, and we worked, it was also that Lars was paid through my company to do that for these 2 months for Sponsor X. Yes, there was a milestone that were going to be achieved at this date, and that was in return for this amount of money, and that was it.
Many of us are used to working on multiple projects, so we could contribute manpower. We just work the APIs and we're done, right? So.
Yeah, but who's going to, that's the point, isn't it? Who's going to contribute
And to answer your other question, there's a part that cannot be donated in manpower, and simply is the UI design.
Okay, this is open printing, like architecture and working group. That working group supposedly will be able to.
That's tilt. It can be Ira when you're not busy, Ira.
Yes, as long as open printing is a one man show, it will not come very far.
I will put it on the action item list and we can do next.
I mean, you can see how Linux Foundation covered the other printing needs is by giving Till a job and he picks up everything that comes along, so...
He did that before, though.
Yeah. Yeah, but I solidified the position by paying him for it every month now. One thing that I... One thought in a totally different direction is like, so what's the definition of what government should provide? And the definition is what either people shouldn't be doing or that nobody else wants to do. That's what the government provides. Printing goes sort of, or the print dialogue goes sort of in that direction, like, really nobody wants even to pick up this kind of work, as you see from no interns, no nobody. Katie Gnome, absolutely nobody wants to work on this. They run away from it.
Red Hat, we had a meeting on 2006 for the print, and then we decided to use a print dialog. And I think Red Hat contributed a significant amount of time and manpower, and they developed GTK Cloud Print Dialog.
Yeah, but I'm talking about that Larry Ewing that did that. Was it blah blah Ewing was his name? The person who presented to you in Atlanta. I saw him a bit later with the first designs of the printing dialog, and he literally he sped off. He sort of said, yeah, see you later, mate, and I never saw him again. He answers no mail. Everybody runs away from printing if there's not assigned by a manager to sit on it and do it, which means inside these GTK even and KDE and GNOME, it is like if it's not somebody's job, as it said, to do that and is fully paid for that and must do it, then can't be ours to do it.
Till sums it up. It's not sexy.
I have a this question from if Google was right yesterday that the world is changing how you access things and the desktops are falling back and all of the different devices are going to take their place, and currently Linux printing to a printer manual like yourself is very limited, does it make sense, as I completely agree with Peter, people run from it, don't really want to do it anyway, it was a good idea, but is it still a good idea? Or is it like...
Do what?
To do the common print dialog, or is it too late?
Well, no. So even if you go to cloud printing, which all the manufacturers love, for lots of reasons we like it, okay? You need a dialog. You still need an interface to the human being, to the user, right?
Yeah, but
then he can choose a point in the network.
No.
In the end, you would make the same interface. It would all be web-based. You just launch a web browser. You wouldn't even know you were talking to a web browser, and it would be the same.
And he should choose what the point has to do, which
is
a
common.
It
would have to be a common.
Even with IPP everywhere, where...
It would have to be a dialogue.
Have to be a dialogue.
Right.
It's just that the input to the dialogue is more generic than before.
They don't plug in yet.
A couple of filters.
When they plug in, then we won't need dialogue.
I mean, you can look.
Well, it's the same problem.
At least nobody can arms because you.
Now though, it's a different story because now it's not Linux.
Yeah, that's what I'm just wondering.
So now it's. Does that work for Windows?
Yes.
Does it work for Apple? Yes. Does it work for Google? Yes. Does it work for Linux? Yes. Oh well, we should do this. Here's some money. You'll make a great web page.
Is that the way to leverage this? And then, oh, by the way, it works in Linux as well.
By default, it would just fall into Linux. Linux would just take it. Because then at that point, I have this interface. I can have as many web page extensions as I want for the vendor to go off into any direction. Printing from the web also offers another class of printing functions we call print services, which is adding frames, adding pictures, which is totally nothing to do with the problem in dialog, but they're services we want to provide, and only really providable on a web app. Okay? So it's great for us. We love it. All the drivers are somewhere in the vaporware.
Right.
You don't ever see a driver. Till won't even know what a PPD is. Okay?
Is it possible for application,
that's a whole new
when they click print, they invoke a web browser, like CAPS web and then user can use web browser to type in all this information and print and everything work. Is it possible?
Sure, why not? Now put the data file.
It's possible, but it's not usable.
Is it possible?
It
would really, I mean, at the end, it's...
The web browser.
He says he opens a web browser.
It has nothing to do with...
You would not know you're opening a web browser.
Yeah, what's the difference between a web browser and a dialogue?
Yeah, just a window would pop up. It would just have to be a browser window. You wouldn't know it.
My browser can look very fancy, too.
Oh, no. I can make it look like a window.
Level.
I can make it look like a window.
But
it doesn't matter.
The content of the window comes out of the internet. Or
Yeah, it's an XML file.
Yes, it's an implementation method of the same design.
But when I have a computer and a printer in the same room at my home, for example, I also want to be able to print when the internet is not connected.
No, but that's still just a web browser to do local printing.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is,
those cases are much rarer, too.
Right now, when they train Ricoh's technical support for customer printing, they always tell them, okay, first you tell the customer, use CAPS web print interface. Config printers to install printers. Easy to do, whether it's beautiful or not, as long as it functions, solve a customer problem, no problem for us.
But with actual cloud printing, there's no cuts either. There's not all that damage.
Yeah, but
in terms of you take all the good work that's been done since 2005, 2006, and it's coalescing and turning into something, my sense was what you were talking about. What happens when you're a printer vendor looking at the different environments and making sure you're selling printers, that the fact it's being done independently in an environment that is fully open is good, but it doesn't easily turn into something you can then tell manager why to send money. So I was just wondering if there's a way you change what you link it to, not to wreck the design, but just to say, here you're throwing more money.
No, right now we have to do it by OS. And in fact, Linux is everybody here is making it quite simple, but you cannot, usually Red Hat, SUSE, Ubuntu does not have the same driver, because they have to be compiled separately, we have to test them separately, we have to make them separately. So we only support four Linux OSs, okay? I mean, to me, they're the same as adding, you add two more, you have Windows and Apple, the same level to us. We have the same amount of testing. No. What's my incentive for doing that? On a 1%, when these represent together 1%.
Right.
Yeah.
So now, if you go to cloud, all that disappears. I'm only interested in the total computer market now, right?
Right.
There is no operating system anymore.
Right. Which is nice, because it was the toll driver heading away.
From the OS, which they don't want. That's the only reason they want IPP everywhere, is because they don't want an OS.
Right.
I mean, they don't want the drivers to be everywhere.
Yeah,
locally,
it's
right?
Too big. They don't want to carry that.
There's too many.
Right. Forward anymore.
Right.
So is there a cheaper way to make the printing a common print dialogue?
No, I don't know if there's a cheaper way. There needs to be a defined way, a defined development path.
Also,
your
yeah,
value proposition to the printer manufacturers to be able to say, you should go down this path because, and it would make sense to them. But right now, it's you should go down this path, and they check the path and say, but we're not selling much to that path anyway. Why am I throwing money over there?
That's, you know, and then tell me, who's working on it? Oh, a college student's working on a part-time flat.
So
okay, let's go.
That
I'm not listening to you. Okay, that means what they say. So.
But, I mean, it's really
well,
good,
if
really
you present it like that, you also say that, sorry, Lars is extremely capable in this. I work with more clients at big corporations than when I work with Lars, who picks it up and implements it exactly to the spec, for instance.
I can say all that. It's not going to matter.
I know, it doesn't matter, but you don't have to represent him as a college kid. He's quite...
He's not employed by any organization.
He's finishing...
He's not employed by any company. He is a college student. I'm sorry. And
so
he's
I would
working
like,
on it on a part-time basis. So when if I have
yeah,
a problem and I go, oh, I'm going to contact Lars. Well, Lars is off in the class right now. I can't really deal with Lars.
Actually,
so now what do I do?
What you're asking for is a service level. Every service level in the industry costs a amount of money if you want to have a continuous type of service level. That's also the part of the deal then. What I want to say to your question is like, I go to Lexington the first time. I come there in. HP is presenting and said exactly what I said yesterday. We support 1,000 models, 10 years back, everything works, technical level, but these printing dialogues are hurting our business. We are losing money on this. Exactly said like that. I was amazed by that because I was also coming like, yeah, what are these printer companies actually expecting from this because it's such a small market. I can see the point exactly. 1% market. What does it matter? You just have to have a toehold there for
drivers
just in case it goes big.
Users don't see the driver, whether or not they have a single driver supporting 10,000 or we have 10,000 drivers supporting individual printers.
The dialogue
the user
was hurting
never sees
the business.
That. The user never sees
the
that.
Dialogue was hurting the business. This is costing us money. That was exactly what HP said, literally, like,
and I'm
there.
And I argued that point.
Mm.
But how much money is it? I sold 3 more printers this year because I have Linux solution. Okay, that's in the noise.
I know it looks like 1% at 5 million users, so it is simply the 1%. Although it's 5 million, it is simply only 1%.
So what I'm taking back, no, I think is 2006, now it's 2010. Are we still on this topic or
yes.
Move on?
Yes, that's the other thing.
Can we get it done and last year we're going to make a shorter push and make it 2 steps.
Yeah, the aggravating thing was last year was like, indeed, you guys saying, can this go faster? And then was like, who does what? It's like...
Go be too big, in my opinion.
No.
The
point is that you simply want to have it, and when it's time to put
the
nickel, it is nothing...
The product is too big. That's what I'm saying.
In what way? It is only a print dialogue.
Taking 4 years, I haven't been done, so the scope of the product is too big. We need to make it smaller and make it achievable.
You may, it's maybe not related to how much manpower and money goes into this?
It will be too big, I'm saying. We can make it more enough.
You can't,
one
because
can
it has to support.
One person can
no,
do it in 1 week.
There's one thing what perhaps be last should perhaps write up a plan, for example, for how to finish it, how long it would take for which work until it's finished. And this plan should be presented by two different companies, and then one asks them whether they would sponsor this.
Can I remind you that it's not just about Lars? It is the same level of service that you want. We do this when we have time. If we don't have time, nothing happens in the print dialogue anymore because there's no specification for it. It's also something you want to remember. So that's why it's also going so slow. This is not done in full-time steam ahead because they're simply a milestone plan. So that it gets back to only code counts is something that really grates me because everything that makes that thing work is what came from us too, actually, when it is on the user level and what makes printers use ink so you can sell it again. And if you want to write a print dialog in a week, you can see the results, well, not even that, it's taken a month or two to write with open offices there, which is super generic, like plunk in the parameters, value pairs, and that's it. That's unusable.
Probably you could get the, Peter is talking about the service. I mean, the whole cost, not only from the development of
the design phase. Yeah, it's the design phase
to us. So it's, at least, that helps us when we report back to management, they want to support
yeah.
us.
Make it a, you know, 7 bullets still.
What?
7 bullets. Design, phase one, phase two, or something. Something very, very crude and something very, very simple. If we can get anybody in our company to listen at that level, then we can ask for the details.
And also a target cost, because if you're going to ask only how much are you going to need, at least at some point, we can pool together the resources to match the total cost of your targeting.
Right. Vendors do know how to communicate with each other, so we can do that.
Almost think we're barking up the wrong tree, because for you it's 1%, but for Ubuntu it's 100% of users who use this. No.
Ubuntu is not a printer company. If
no.
If you do with selling printers,
Print Dialog.
Care about them.
Print Dialog is no. This is the other side. It's a desktop environment interfacing with a printer.
No, it's a Linux environment interfacing with a printer, not a desktop. Desktop is Windows. 97% of the population, the desktop is Windows.
No, not from your perspective, but when you put Red Hat, Ubuntu, and SUSE together, then 100% of their users are using this stuff. They have crap print dialogues. It's hurting their enterprise business where they want to move into, where they have big plans. So when somebody can see, like, is this going to help 100% of what we sell to, it's like, yeah, that's on the desktop environments. It's not you guys, but for you guys, it's only 1%. So with you, a slide where this is going to... No, do you understand it? We bring it two parts. Who benefits most from this? It's not even you guys, like
yeah.
you said. I understand that. For you, it's like, it sort of works, so what's it? We have our drivers. What do we care?
So
who should actually care? KDE and GNOME.
Yeah. So what are the ballpark figure you say you were giving for...
100,000.
So, Peter, also, aside from us, the resources should also come from the distro to get their experience on the desktop. Much better.
Yeah.
Is that right?
And the distros, do
I wouldn't even say, why bother asking the print manufacturers if it's 1% for them? You guys are off the hook. Let's go to the desktop.
And whatever the desktops come up with, we'll
no
support.
One,
and we did that right then. Okay? Because the interface is new caps and we support it. So we're done. And we do exactly what's
Till,
needed.
I think if you want one conclusion from this, it's like, don't ask the printer companies, ask the desktops.
Yeah.
Or ask the distributions who are actually making the money.
Yeah, right. Tim?
The SUSE, the enterprise.
Where do we get our dialogues from now?
Hmm?
Tim? Where do we get our dialogues from now?
I used to.
We don't make them. Windows does.
Hmm.
Mac does.
Yeah, we...
The OSs do. The desktops do.
And KDE and GNOME do it in a good world for Linux.
And they wrote their print dialogues, and our drivers will interface with them.
So when
so
these do
all,
it...
What's all this picture? Nothing from our point of view.
Yeah.
So when these two desktop environments says, hey, great stuff, we want it, send us the patches, we just say, like, well, that's 50,000 each, and that's when you're going to...
You're going to attack the print vendors.
Yeah, let us know when the check's in the mail.
You won't attack the print vendors at all, because whatever you come up with, we will interface to.
Hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Because
so,
you're not going to... You cannot make a radical shift to what you interface from the from your dialogue to the driver. It's either going to go to the test, or it's going to be some known mechanism, which we're already supporting.
So, Till, can we close off with that
yes. I think
epiphany that we just had?
What we have to do is to talk with the distributions. Tim, are you on the phone?
Check his answer.
I am, yes.
Yes. Perhaps you should also talk with the management of your distribution.
No, we should go directly to the management of these distributions, of the people who are extremely interested to get their stuff into enterprise. They're the ones who have the problem right now.
Yes, yes, I think this would be the right way, then we should go to the management of distribution.
I think you are actually.
Unfortunately, no, not the management of distribution comes to the printing summit.
No, you go to them. You use even Linux Foundation's levers to get to the right person.
Yes.
You got, and it's on the business side, it's not even on the engineering side.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
We can move to the...
I'm done.
But if I wasn't going to get old, I wanted to get stuck.
So the last session of the 2010 printing summit, the HP session, one thing is the slide deck which I have got is a handout slide deck and not a screen slide deck. So do you have the slide deck either to give to me or you or something to the virtual room? Perhaps you overtake the virtual room.
Yes, I will do so.
Till later on, could you post the real slide deck? These are, of course, hard to view on one screen.
You would like also to have the real slide deck, the non-handout slide deck that he can use this as.
Just
so that I can upload
a question, too.
Yes, that
just
be
general.
So how much funding do you get from Linux Foundation and the time you use to hire somebody like intern students? Or in the past, you have been able to hire some people to do some jobs.
I only one head lab, but I don't know how much they negotiate as the funding.
Oh, okay, so generally speaking, every year, do you have like a disposable funding, like say, how much amount can be used for what?
I don't have any funding. I get my salary, and I get also from HP printers worth $10,000 a year, and this is, and I get my travel expenses refunded.
Okay.
And this is what I have with which I can work.
Because you don't have any funding for any development activities.
No, I don't have funding for development activities. I cannot employ a student, and I cannot offer money for someone to fix a certain bug like the GhostScript developers do.
We seem to be losing ground. The number of presenters has now gone to zero.
What's the matter, Ira? We're all here, Ira.
No, in the virtual room, the number of presenters went from 1 to 2, and it has now gone to zero.
We're working on a technical difficulty, Ira.
Yes. One thing is, I've given the virtual... We are now on another laptop broadcasting the virtual room.
Okay.
It's not me anymore.
Connection to the Linux. Oh, the network's down, Ira. We're really stuck now.
Yeah, the network was turned off.
Well, they probably turned it off.
Yeah.
But I cannot upload them.
Well, you go to another network, but...
One thing is, at least you can download the old... slides.
I think we've all got the old slides, so just carry on and do
old
the
slides. Carry on. From the content, they are good. They are
good
only
way.
Not viewable full screen because they have a lot of space around them. Perhaps you quickly print them. Perhaps this is very easier for you. With 10 pages of paper, but... stay online, and this is also for free, and you can, you must once run a browser to activate it.
But it's
slower. Because we are going near the end of the summit that has the main network, the Linux network, it's already taken down, that they are already...
get the headphone over me.
Picking up the equipment.
The last
PWG.
The last next.
No, the last one.
from my mailbox.
What?
It's still going from my email box.
Ah, yes. The mail did not come up till now.
Otherwise, it is not getting projected.
I can only understand why they shifted up here.
Is your mail up?
It's still happening.
If it does not work, use the mail always stick.
No.
Yes, this is the fastest network carrying a memory stick from that to here.
What's the hold up at the moment?
Sorry?
What's the hold
up? Hold up.
What's the hold up at the moment?
I'm uploading the slide because the uploaded slide is wrong.
For those of you who don't
Till, are you going to use the virtual room or just present the slides?
In a recovery. You must reload the Open Printing webpage, the Summit webpage, because the slides are renamed, and then use the same link.
Function F4, right? There is no other fix I can try. There is nothing else I can try, right? It's just except the F4. Function F4. I mean, it's not even connecting. I mean, getting project.
So you can start. Connect yourself with the projector.
No, it's not working. I have been trying so many times.
Change your resolution.
Will that help? Change to what?
If Till has the slides, just connect Till to the projector.
Ira?
Yeah.
Hi.
So the Linux Foundation reflector hasn't actually changed yet, but that doesn't matter. Go ahead.
With the Linux Foundation?
They were paying you, my son, right?
So it's the problem now to get the projector working.
We'll just shift to Till's machine, his sofa. Mm-hmm. We'll just again move it back to
Till. Our problem is now that the projector stopped working.
We'll move it back.
What?
We're moving
it.
Yes, we have an
Yes. So can you stop your screen card?
Yeah, I stopped.
And I need the piece of paper for the cable.
The slides that are uploaded on the Linux Foundation website,
yes,
it seems to be a PowerPoint file or a PDF file.
Yes, the file
it's fine, I can read it, but it might be your problem.
Yes, the file which is on the Linux Foundation website is not a PDF file. It seems that it's some Windows file format. And so... So the only, if every one of you has the screencast, we can perhaps, then I need the slides, because I have the screencast now. The problem is, her laptop does not support the projector. When she shows the slides, we don't see them in our room.
Hill, do you have the previous copy of the slides? Just scale them and project them. Let's go ahead. The previous, the ones that were posted before, which Tim and I probably both have, work.
No, because they are still on the server, they are not linked now, because I've switched over the link to the new one. I go to the previous now. So that everyone can download the previous and see at least these ones, which was my first idea what you had to do on the phone. So that we can finally
Tell, do you have OpenOffice on your machine there? Because it displays fine in OpenOffice.
Yeah, Till, the one, the original ones are close enough to view.
Yes, but
I must
click me through now to fix it, to reconnect them. Because
it does,
it's done something in the hope that it's an PDF export. But in reality, it seems to simply have saved the file in the window in the Microsoft Office format or whatever, or in some special Microsoft format.
Yeah, Till, don't worry about it. Leave the darn link broken. Just go ahead and project something in that room, and Tim and I will listen.
Thank you.
do have releases in every 6 to 8 weeks of period with some new features and as well as quality enhancements. And the rest is about just how widely it is used and how we are supporting the community with any issues for HPLX. So I'll not dive into this thing because I know many of you have been familiar with HPLX and have been attending previous sessions. So in case there is any question, please stop me. Or otherwise, I'll keep it as short as possible. This is the architecture which the HPLX architecture it looks like. It's currently mainly based on the CUP. And as you see, we do support many utilities, whereas I have shown only four over here, but there are many more which we support for various functionalities. And we do support mainly the default filters. Right now, what we support is HPCUF and HPCUF FAX, supporting FAX. But we are also continuing to support HPIDS filter, which was the filter with this project started with. And we have our own backends, both for printing and the FAX, and we base on same. And we have our own, continuing to backend is we have our own I/O communication. And we have a fully sophisticated installation support and as well as a UI tool set and many different protocols that supported for printing, scan and fax quality.
Thank you.
which would be needed for a vaccine. This would require to ban all applications before doing auction. This would require the common printing guidelines, because common printing guidelines support it. Then, no pop-up debug stuff does not need to be made.
Which HPLib is supporting. This is for the configuration of the device, the printer installation, and device discovery. We do support both SFP and Bonjour now. It is people can select how they want the device discovery to be, whether it is through USB or network or wireless. And then according to that, the options also change here. And then the devices found will be listed here. And based on that, what the user selects, we do display the printer queues to be set up and the PPD for the printer, that particular printer device. And if that device is supporting fax, we also go and set up a different queue for fax configuration. And here people can specify what the number of this fax device are, and some of the parameters which are actually used when a handshake happens between two fax devices. And this is another set of tools, UI tools, which is mainly the administrative kind of stuff, where here you can see that there are two fax queues, but they are for the same device. One is for the printer and another is for the fax functionality. And as you can see here, all the functionalities which are with that particular device is displayed, which right also includes like aligning cartridge, cleaning cartridge, etc. And we do have certain tasks, and which again different tasks can be done. Here you can see the status of either the fax job or the print job. And you can see the cartridge levels, and you can control the queue, and you can set the device settings also. And this is another set of tools, which is for printing and fax. The top two snapshots are for printing. It's just a two wizard utility, which is one where you are selecting the file. You can select any number of files, and valid types, the file formats which you support are also can be checked here. And then the print job settings can be made here, and then the print job can be submitted. And here, what you see is the fact UI utility where you can select any type of curve page. We do support many different types of curve page, and you can then comes the file selection where you can select any number of files, and after that you can select the fax numbers. I mean, there are CPN fax numbers, or it can be in a group, or you can just quickly add it. We do support a fax address book. And then the next wizard will help, I mean, is for submitting the fax job. And this is what we have done since the last summit, that is in April 2009, which is about, we have added around 81 new printer models. And whatever new distro releases have been happening, we are keeping up with them. Either we are supporting them through auto installation or like through the Debian or RPM packages.
Okay. Now,
HTTP
to replace
HTTP IDEA? Yeah,
HTTP IDEA.
I'm talking about HTTP and HTTP IDEA.
Python gaming, but HTML is the kids program. I don't know if it's
for the India.
Yes, yes.
No,
that
okay.
Was important.
Okay.
But it's all free. And the whole HTML is free live.
But
it's free enough to qualify to get into Linux.
Yes.
Well, that's more about the
Okay, so, as we just discussed, we have moved from HP IBS to HP GUF being the default filter. So, as a sequel to this thing, and just now what thing you mentioned, to cater up problems, like we are trying to upgrade our DRE file to exactly match the product specification. But this has been like an ongoing task, so we might take a few more releases until you will start seeing that all those problems which you are observing with the HP comes getting resolved. But we are going, with each printer family, and then we are trying to fix all those issues.
So you are also following the bug which gets reported on the wall. Yes, very
interesting.
Because what I do when I find bugs like that, I think the error has upstream come to do it, so that it's considered an upstream file, and I can see that it's not going to be a separate file.
But if you
It's quite hard for us on the phone to hear what's being said at the moment.
Wi-Fi configuration, and the digital signature support is added for printer plugin download.
Uh-huh.
And we are supporting basically, even though we have mentioned the device name, it is basically a new PAC protocol which was supported.
Uh-huh.
And the Bonjour support was also done in the last 1 year. And we are providing two new packages which will contain only the print filter components. No other components of HQLib will get in. And finally, the last big thing was it got transitioned to HP Bangalore.
So, is it done by you guys or by
your
own team?
It's done by a team in Bangalore.
Oh,
you can support
destroy many PCLs with something called inkjet and lasers, but I tried it with a design jet and it did not succeed, and I found a patch for GhostScript and it did it worse, and now I'm supporting the printer that way.
Is planned for the rest of the year, that is, which we haven't done. Now, there are many new devices and with major enhancements.
What did you say?
So, there are many new devices which are coming out of HP with which are like the major releases in terms of the printer devices. So, that itself amounts to a huge amount of effort for us to support with a lot of different protocols and data formats to be supported. So that is what we have planned. And there is a new model for printer configuration or interaction or any such work which is called as Elidium. So that is one of the another big chunk of work which will have to be done for the by the end of 2007. And obviously the rest of the things are the ongoing activities which are supporting the new distros and quality enhancements and
what is quality enhancements?
I mean the basically the defects. Bugs
of
defects.
The bugs. Oh, the bugs, but
yeah.
You don't mean quality principles.
Yes, the bugs of the people with
quality
of your wound tool and which I mark up.
I'm not sure what the answer was, okay.
And this is what is one of the interesting things I really wanted to discuss. So a couple of issues which we have been seeing that is, and which are not in our control, where we can do something and fix it, but we get affected are here. So the one issue is probably the easiest among these is the MIME types and MIME conversion files. They are not in consistently in the same location. Sometimes they find it in ETC cast and sometimes they find it in user list. So it's like...
The user share MIME.
Yeah, MIME.
This was introduced because of the requirements of the distribution.
Okay.
Everything in ETC is a config file which the administrator is supposed to change. And everything anywhere else is not a config file which the packages are supposed to update when they contain the file.
So,
to be able to update my file with the usual update, we had to move these files into user share live, into user share cast live. And the original patch to user was done by me. And to hold the MIME files and MIME constants which come with cup there, and only if the file is a file cup MIME type file or MIME constant file, is then it overrides the appropriate file in user share cup MIME. So that still the administrator can configure. But if he does not configure,
configure
this how to cater for this problem.
Okay. So you said something about configure, right? So how do they configure? How do they configure?
What?
Administrators can configure the...
For example, they can put a file, etc,
okay,
and then a name, and the extension call. And then they define a rule for a certain conversion, which already exists in the file user share cup mine, but the rule uses a different filter. When the rule in etc cup file.con has priority against the rule in user share cup mine.
Okay.
Yes, we must make it in a way that for everyone it works.
I have actually, we have seen different distros, not just Ubuntu, like Fedora, OpenSUSE, Debian, and all.
The patch went up. I have made the patch, and then the patch was at first only in Debian and Ubuntu.
Okay.
And then the patch with the time went up, and now this functionality is in all distros.
Okay. But the real problem for us is, it's not consistent. In a sense, sometimes we see nothing being there in etc because everything is in user share. And sometimes we have seen the reverse. And sometimes we see certain files are under user share and some files are in etc cache. And I try to play around with them, but I could not see whether cache is having a logic like it has a priority over. Like it first reads etc cache and then it goes to user share. I couldn't find any logic, such logic, where we can...
I think...
The files which come with
I think the solution to that thing is to just ask on like the CUPS mailing list or something like that. You know, the people there don't bite.
The files which come with CUPS. They are all in user share CUPS mine. But there are files from other packages where the developers of that packages did not follow the new policy and keep their files in etc cache.
Okay.
But it was patched that away that these packages are also correct and have it in user share cache.
Are you requesting
files are not all
the location?
Sorry?
Are you requesting the location be standardized?
No. Basically what we want to understand is there any standard already? Does CUPS is having any logic inside it so that it goes with some priority or it has some...
Rules which are etc cache have priority against rules for the same purpose which are in user share cache mine.
And where is this document?
It should be documented in the CUPS document.
Okay.
If not,
I
we'll
haven't
order
seen
it.
Yeah, I
have
not seen
that.
Two,
for the same problem, if user installed RFC packet, do that from go away or?
So if the user installs an LSC package, for if we are following CUPS 1.1, the MIME-type would be etc CUPS if a package is MIME-type. But I highly recommend not to change the existing rules, but only ship rules in your own MIME types and MIME rules to which do not exist yet.
Well, I remember having some talk about virtual store, CPD bound. In CUPS, it's stored like a user share CUPS model, but I think there's some talking to be put into like a user share CPD.
Yes, this is the newer version, user share CPD.
This is the
LSD version.
Yeah. So in RSP versions,
does
it define where to put the MIME type file,
MIME.conversion, MIME.conversion? No, LSP does not define anything different. For LSP, these files are there where CUPS takes them.
So
the
user share?
Where
is
it? And if the LSC is defined is based on CUPS 1.1, it's etc CUPS. And when we reach LSC 4.1 and we have, where we uplift to 1.3, then I think 1.3 was the switch over, then it would be user share CUPS 9. You have to put both. Yeah, both are supported. Because
the next problem which we encounter is that the number of filters which we see which are coming I'm not very sure whether they come with the CUPS installation or then are they're also added by distros. But the number of filters or the type of filters which we see across distros also differ, and sometimes we see the behavior also changing.
Yes, this so, is the following.
I think I can add some input into why it is that you're seeing different versions of HP Lip being shipped in different distributions. It's because there's no stable branch. So each maintainer has got to basically pick one and keep plugging away at fixing bugs in it until they're happy with it. Because they dare not go to the next version because it's basically just a snapshot. It's not a new version in a stable branch. It's just the code, you know, at that point, with new features and possible regressions and support for new printers as well as bug fixes.
Okay.
Yes, one thing is in principle, the Debian and Ubuntu distribution, there's a PDF base workflow, and therefore there's a PDF base up there.
Okay.
And the OSS and Fluxus distribution have to be the Postgres base workflow.
Yeah,
and therefore they don't have to be
the
PDF base
workflow. Okay. You can compare the results. And you know, we're also finding problems with the technical for this. We're putting the user share disk in the LIB64.
Yes, this is fair. This is the plugin to the user list to put the user list. The user list cuts into LIB64. LIB64 is only for libraries, not for executable. The user list cuts must always be user list cuts on all platforms, and this is a bucket. And it is probably done with capture. I think if you take the upstream cup and to configure it, make it installed, they would go in the front.
And I mean, the kind of problems what we get to see is also like sometimes just the text to PS conversion, you just open the PS file with the GoScript, GSU, we see some top line slip, but that happens only on certain distros. So, and similar to
then
that,
we brought back to them.
Yeah, that was one of the things I wanted to get clarified.
Okay.
Should we contact the distros or should we take
the everyone who observes them.
We would love you to. We would really love you to. We want more cooperation two ways rather than it being simply code coming out from HP and us having to deal with it.
Okay.
And especially as you are a developer of a Linux software, HP driver for Linux, you are probably doing a lot of testing and hit a lot of marks of the stuff which does not come from you, which comes somehow from the distro.
Yeah.
I think then you should also report this bug to the distro.
Okay. So another thing which we have observed, that is from Ubuntu 9.04 to Ubuntu 9.10, is that some of the filters themselves are missing, something like image to PS. We see them in 9.04, but we are not seeing them in 9.10. So
I did not take any filters out of the CUP package. I cannot imagine how the image to PS can go away. I have added an image to PDF, but I did not remove the image to PS.
So that is one of the observations, as you can see here, like we could not handle any of the image types with the 9.10, and when we started debugging, what we ended up seeing is that the filter itself is not available.
When the images are converted, the distro will use the image to PDF filter, and if this filter does not convert the image, then I think it has to be forwarded to Koji Otani, because he was the one who brought the image to PDF. And he fixed the bugs quickly. He has fixed for me a lot of bugs in PDF to PDF.
Okay.
Yeah.
fine. I mean, I think the Google script, we had an issue, but Hintak sent me an email, so we can take it offline with him.
Which one?
We had an issue with Google script when the device is tip from G4, and particularly if we are using a redirection through a pipe. So what we observed is that GoScript generates the TIFF format and then it speaks into certain tag locations to update it. But when there is a redirection through a pipe, it doesn't give that peak permission. So in that way, that TIFF file generated will be corrupted one, which we can't use for it. So in that, anyway, I think you are CC'ing that mail. In that center mail saying that too.
Yes, I must go.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have much time to read in the last days.
Okay.
Simply because of organizing the summit and updating the agenda and uploading recordings and everything that has to be done to make the summit work.
Okay. So, and CPD anyway, we have been now sharing all the days and that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. So any questions?
Can I go back to I have a question actually.
Is there?
So one of the things that was added in the last year was MDNS support.
Okay.
Why was that added to HPLIT instead of, for example, the CUPS DNS SD backend? Mike Sweet was saying about adding full Avahi support to CUPS in 1.5. That seems like an area where HP could have contributed that to CUPS rather than it being specific to an HP project.
So one thing is we are depending on our own backends and our own I/O and device discovery mechanisms rather than using CUPS.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's actually part of what I think is wrong with HPLIT. It's that it's trying to do too much, because you've got like this HP queue setup, you've got an HP job viewer, you've got an HP utility for viewing supply levels, and they're all HP specific, and it's not going to be the case that every manufacturer is going to ship their own job viewer and supply levels viewer and what have you, and there are sort of more generic ways this can be done to work within a framework that CUPS provides, so that it would work for everyone.
Yeah, I get your point. All I can say is going ahead, we will try to keep this consideration, but whatever we already have in our architecture, it's something we can't change it as of now. But going ahead, we will try to be as generic and make use of what is available already with the CUPS or any other source.
Is there any plan to have a public source code repository for HPLIT?
May not be in the near future.
How about a stable branch so that it's just bug fixes going into it?
So, okay, to answer that question, actually, to provide a branch or any such support requires quite an amount of work for us, because we have a lot of proprietary components which we cannot expose, so we have to take them out and expose only what is 100% open sourced. So that requires an amount of work, both for us and as well as for HP Legal. So in that way, I don't see it happening in any time soon. But otherwise, if you have any queries or any information, you're always welcome to contact us.
Couldn't there be an entirely free source code repository that's public, and then the proprietary plugin bit could be in obviously your own source code repository within HP?
Yeah.
then also with stable branches, I mean, I maintain projects. Branch merges from stable branches into, you know, the current trunk are not hard. You know, they don't take very much time. It's just a case of using the right source code repository technology.
I understand what you are saying, but from our end, to really accomplish that, it also involves HP legal to work on it, and only then it can come out. So that will require some amount of time and a lot of collaboration from us with the HP legal and other entities. So which is not which so easy, and it cannot happen anytime sooner.
Sure. I mean, I think in the long run, it would save time and effort, because I mean, if there's a public source code repository, for example, that package maintainers for the different distributions could commit changes to themselves, they could help out all kinds of things, such as, for example, where do the MIME files go, and those kind of issues, packaging as well. You know, the package HP gets for different distribution. That could be done by the package maintainers themselves. No, I do it for Fedora anyway. You know, that's part of my job. So I could more easily contribute that back if there was a public repository.
Yes, I understand what you are saying, Tim. We will see how soon we can make it. But as of now, I cannot commit on any time frame.
Okay.
Till?
Till?
Till, there are about a dozen people talking in that room. It's impossible for us to hear Suma speaking. Are you wrapping up? Are there more topics today?
I think it's the printing summit is completed for this year. Am I right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Or anything scheduled this time. Not that we're willing to say this.
Yeah. So I can stop the phone.
Yeah.
Yes, we are ready.
It's completed for 2010.
No, for the spring. We might have
yes, the spring printing summit of 2010 is completed.